You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you all for being here as we take historic action to deliver a future of safety and security for Americans of every race, religion, color, and creed. We're joined today by law enforcement professionals and community leaders. Though we may all come from different places and different backgrounds, we're united by our desire to ensure peace and dignity and equality for all Americans.
June the 17th, 2020, that's President Trump yesterday in the Rose Garden as he signed that police reform executive order. The executive order that basically, for one thing, chokeholds will be banned except if an officer's life is at risk, and also other issues in there. And today, Senator Tim Scott, Republican, South Carolina, introducing a Senate bill. It's already under attack. The president's executive order is under attack. Perfect example here, Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer, specifically referring to Senator Scott's reform plan. And Senator Scott, I should not have to remind you, and I don't do it just to paint colors, but this is a black senator from South Carolina. And he came up with this reform package to protect communities of color as well. And Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer is already criticizing it, saying it's ineffective. We need more improvement. Are we going to have police reform meaningful, or are we going to have another political game? And Senator Tim Scott makes the point, you don't have to choose sides between police and police reform. They're not a binary choice. We're going to get into that in a lot more detail over the next 2 hours. In Seattle, the chaos continues. That's right. Chaz, Chop, whatever they want to call it now, continues to just occupy six blocks of Capitol Hill in Seattle. And city crews were moving in to help put up additional barricades for the folks living in the Chop area, trying to make sure that they were being protected, I guess, or to keep others out. I don't know what the point is. But they're not doing anything to try to move in and break them up. Yesterday's ruling from the Supreme Court on LGBT rights and discrimination involving employers, Justice Gorsuch, appointed by President Trump, and also Chief Justice Roberts, siding with a majority, 6-3, saying that it was a discriminatory action and it was going to give protection, advanced protection, more protection for LGBT rights. I expressed my view yesterday, and some folks might have a hard time understanding my point, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. We're going to be joined a bit later by Hans von Spakovsky with his take on this issue. And, of course, we have other issues in front of you before we wrap up the next 2 hours. Felons voting. What do you think about felons voting? They've served their time. They're out of prison. They have a felony record. Should they have voting rights restored? This is not the same as allowing those still in prison the right to vote. Once you've served your time, you paid your price to the community, society, should you then have that right restored? That's a new debate. An old subject, but now new debate points being brought up. Also, more information on the coronavirus, and some are saying it might actually be traced to indirectly to Corona beer. Now, hang on, don't jump the gun on me. They're talking about in the sense that a lot of folks going to bars, whether they're drinking Corona or whatever, are adding the spike of the coronavirus. And then this issue from the brand maker and company owning Aunt Jemima Syrup and Pancake Mix, deciding to do away with Aunt Jemima brand, saying, "We accept that it's racist." They've been under attack for a long time, and now they're making that decision. It's their company. They can make their own decision. But what is your view? Is Aunt Jemima on the syrup or pancake mix box racist? That's a question that we're going to be getting into in a lot more detail before we wrap up the next 2 hours. So let your friends and family and neighbors know we're on the air. Get them to tune in right now. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And, of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality and lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Short, my hair was long, caught somewhere between a boy and man. She was 17 and she was far from in between. It was summertime in northern Michigan.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Where were you for the 8 years of the Obama administration? I'm getting a little tired of being lectured to by my Democratic colleagues that all this is Trump's fault. You had 8 years under President Obama, the Justice and Policing Act, none of it was taken up virtually. So let's knock that off. You're making no points with me.
That is Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, the senior senator from South Carolina, and Tim Scott, Republican of South Carolina, is the junior member, both Republicans representing South Carolina. Lindsey Graham said, "Already I'm getting pushback and noise from the left. They want to complain and attack. Where were you the last 8 years? You had opportunities to do things. You didn't do anything." And look back over the 8 years. There were obvious reports of either actual police brutality and excessive force leading to death, or suspected, or in some cases immediately interpreted as such, but then later proven not so. For instance, Ferguson, Michael Brown, hands up, don't shoot. The Justice Department, even under Eric Holder, under the direction of President Trump, could not find any reason to charge the officer with civil rights violations or any additional charges, and no charges were filed. But talking about reform, whatever happened there, what else is going on in the street, what can we do about it to make the job easier and better for the good cops and to get rid of the bad cops? Well, already as the bill was presented by the senators today, their Justice Act, Senator Schumer taking to the floor immediately saying, "It's ineffective. We need significant improvement." He said, "We've only had the bill for a few hours. We're reviewing it, but what's clear is that the Senate Republican proposal on policing does not rise to the moment. I am willing to bet you they already had that attitude before they ever got the bill delivered to them." And he says, "We've been reviewing it, and we found it's..." They didn't have to review it to come up with that decision. They were already locked in. They were going to do it anyway. They were going to go after it. Now, the bill basically has additional actions above the president's executive order yesterday. It deals with reform legislation on holding officers directly accountable for enhanced use of force database, pursue restrictions on chokeholds, and the president's executive order yesterday banned them unless necessary for the officer's life if he's at risk. And the Senate Justice Act also creates new commissions to study law enforcement and race. And the man presenting it, Senator Tim Scott, he spearheaded it, a black Republican from South Carolina. He has high hopes for this legislation.
This legislation encompasses that spirit. It speaks to the fact that we believe that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation are good people, working hard, trying to keep order in the communities. Communities of color and people like myself, I've told my story several times, stopped 7 times in 1 year. That has been said a lot, but I was stopped this year driving while black when I got a warning ticket for failing to use my turn signal earlier in my lane change. And so this issue continues, and that's why it's so important for us to say that we hear you. We're listening to your concerns. The George Floyd incident certainly accelerated this conversation, and we find ourselves at a place with a package that I think speaks to the families that I spoke with yesterday who lost loved ones. We hear you. I think this package speaks very clearly to the young person who's concerned when he's stopped by the law enforcement officers. We see you.
Again, that's Senator Tim Scott, a black man, saying, I've been stopped at least 7 times, DWB, driving while black. We all know what that term refers to. And yes, there are officers simply grabbing black drivers from time to time because they'll look for something. Like he said, stopping him because he didn't turn on his turn signal far enough in advance of the lane change. You talk about a discriminatory decision, an arbitrary decision. Even if he had gotten almost to the point of the corner and activated it late, obviously they could have stopped him and dealt with it, or they could also say, you know, pull him over and say, you know, you need to turn that on loose. But stopping as they were doing, they were looking for some opportunity, generally speaking. And it's not just white officers that do it. Black officers do it as well, and other minority officers. But Senator Scott, who knows firsthand, as he said, addressing also those young black men, he said, we see you. We're taking into account what you're dealing with. If Senator Scott, as a standing U.S. senator, can be stopped, as he said recently, for not turning his signal on fast enough, obviously there's a bent and a stereotype that exists within some departments and our officers individually that needs to be corrected. And in fact, not just corrected, but the particular officer either needs to understand we're coming to a halt with that kind of crap, or you're off the force. Now, part of this bill by Senator Scott, which Senator Schumer says, it's not enough. It doesn't rise to the standard. Let him explain what they're looking for in the data collection.
We have to have the right information so that we can direct our resources as a federal government to making sure that the outcomes lead to safer officers and safer suspects in the instances of challenges. That data collection or the information is around making sure that when serious bodily injury occurs or death, that all that information is reported to the FBI. Today, only 40% of the departments report that information to the FBI. We want all that information. Once we have the information, we can then turn to the training that is necessary to de-escalate situations, the duty to intervene, not standing there watching an officer with his knee on the neck, but intervening in those situations. We can train our officers better. We can find ways and mechanisms to de-escalate the situation. So we spend a lot of time in the training aspect, using the resources of our grants to reduce the situations and violence in those situations. And then finally, we look at officer misconduct and the necessity of transparency. We believe that the preservation of records on the local level, so that departments within the states have a chance to see, almost like a reference check, what the past history of complaints have been against that officer.
And that's a critical point. And I will tell you already that police unions across the nation, they're looking at it a little warily, some understanding the basis for it, some already looking at it, it's going to be used as a bludgeon against us, as the unions and the officers. And yes, they need to be aware and concerned about that, but then also sometimes the unions have been wrong to give cover to officers that should have been disciplined or kicked off the force entirely. We're going to get into that in more detail the next hour. But that's a critical part of this whole makeup. And one of the things you heard Senator Scott say, when you have incidents involving police officers and it ends in a death of a suspect, only 40% of those cases have been reported to the FBI. Some states and cities just kind of writing it down and moving on. Only 40%. See, this goes back to what Senator Graham was saying earlier. I don't need to be lectured by the Democrats. Where have you been the last 8 years? You knew that stat existed. You knew that only 40%, or you should have known, were being properly reported. Why didn't you act on it way before Trump ever came? Pardon me. I'm finding a little allergy here, and occasionally it comes back, and I'll sound like a frog, but you're going to have to deal with it. I'm sorry. I'll be a squeaky frog. Don't step on me. All right, let me get back to the point here. Long before Trump came into office, that stat existed. And that's what Senator Graham is saying. Where were you guys the last 8 years if you suddenly think that we're to blame and Trump is to blame? Because that's what they're doing primarily. They're saying all of this action on the street right now, they put on the back of Donald Trump. It's back to the racist whistle call that they want to have you buy into. And yet they use the megaphone and the broadcast platform of all the mainstream media and a Senate floor speech or a House Pelosi speech to hammer home not a real effort for justice, but what can we do to hurt Trump in the process? We got to get past it. We've got to put the politics aside to really make this happen. That's what Senator Graham was saying. He said, I want to work with you. He also said after they had a meeting, he said, after we actually introduced it and I was talking to some other folks, for Democrats, he said, I got the feeling that we could do something. But he said, we're just going to simply go down the same old voting lines, harden our sides, and not be willing to reach across, then it's not going to work. It's not going to work for any legislation, and bottom line, is not going to work for the American public. And Senator Scott made a point to address that this morning as he was introducing his bill, because so many do believe, well, gosh, if I support police reform, I must be anti-police, or I've got to be pro-police and against police reform. You really think that's what you have to decide? Please listen to the opinion of Senator Scott.
Too often we're having a discussion in this nation about, are you supporting the law enforcement community or are you supporting communities of color? This is a false binary choice. The answer to the question of which side do you support, it's I support America. And if you support America, you support restoring the confidence that communities of color have in institutions of authority. If you support America, that means you know that the overwhelming number of officers in this nation want to do their job, go home to their family. It is not a binary choice.
It is not. And do not let the left or the mainstream media force you into A or B. You can have both. It's the same thing when I listen to Senator Kamala Harris saying, we need less police. Less police means more safety. No, it doesn't. And we need to defund police, take that money, give it to teachers who can't afford, you know, that they have to buy out of their own pocket supplies for their students. No, it's not an either or there. We need police enforcement, proper standards. We need supporting police, the funding they need to do the job. We need the same for the teachers. It's not an either or. And Senator Tim Scott added, he said Democrats should not be, quote, demonizing progress for the black community simply because they don't like Trump. He's acknowledged that. He said this is coming from some, even inside the black community, or others outside the black community. They're going to demonize it because they don't like Donald Trump. And Senator Scott pointed out, this administration has reversed the damages done by the 1994 crime bill with the First Step Act. It was President Trump that signed that legislation into law. It was President Trump, this administration, that decided to work with me on opportunity zones to bring $75 billion from the private sector into the poorest communities in this nation. It's not an either or. It's we stand together. And the president yesterday, before the Rose Garden address and his executive order, met with some of the families who have lost loved ones at the hands of police officers who used excessive force leading to their death and, in many cases, criminal action. Please stand by for a response from one of those who was at that meeting.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I mentioned earlier that some of these reforms coming are already causing concern among police unions, but I need to give you a broad overstroke first. The National Fraternal Order of Police, the largest law enforcement union in the nation, praising President Trump's executive order yesterday, stating it strikes a great balance between the vital need for public and officer safety and the equally vital need for lasting, meaningful, enforceable police reform. I'm going to get into that with the unions in a little bit more detail in the next hour, but I wanted to make sure I put that in front of you. And yesterday, in advance of delivering his executive order and discussing it in the Rose Garden, the president met with some of the families that had lost victims in racially charged violence, one of them being Ahmaud Arbery. He is the man who died at the hands of two white men earlier this year, jogging around a neighborhood, and they were suspecting that he was maybe trying to burglarize or something. They're trying to stop him. He doesn't want to stop. He keeps going. And I said, I wouldn't stop. You got a guy in the back of the truck with a rifle or a shotgun, and they're trying to get me to stop. I'm not going to stop for you. But, of course, him being black made him a quicker target for them. One of those attending from the families was Wanda Cooper Jones, Ahmaud Arbery's mother. She was asked later, what did you think of your meeting with President Trump? And here's her response.
I was very, very emotional throughout the whole conference. He was very compassionate. He showed major concerns for all families, not just one family, but for all families. I can say that President Trump was very receiving. He listened and he addressed each and every family accordingly.
Wanda Cooper Jones, a mother of Ahmaud Arbery. She said from her heart in her meeting, you think she's going to make up a lie at the meeting with Trump if she didn't feel that he understood and had compassion? You shouldn't even obviously have to ask somebody, was President Trump compassionate? But the leftists can't see him being compassionate. They can't see him doing anything. And it's the kind of question they were just hoping that you'd begin to criticize the president after that meeting. She spoke from her heart and her concern and her real belief. And other families, similar. That's not what the leftists wanted to hear. They wanted to hear those come out of that meeting saying, well, it really was just a dog and pony show, didn't really do anything. And, of course, President Trump did not allow cameras inside that meeting for that very reason. He said, I'm going to meet with him, but I'm not going to make it political in that sense. Obviously, the fact that I'm meeting with him, you might put that label on it, but the meeting is closed door between us and them. And I know the leftist media was all hell-bent on, oh, wait till they come out of there. We'll get him really pinned down from some of their comments, but not from Ahmaud Arbery's mother. The president's very compassionate, emotional, respectful of all families. We'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Hans von Pakoski from the Heritage Foundation about the ruling yesterday from the Supreme Court, which Rush Limbaugh said the Supreme Court LGBTQ decision is the biggest sellout of conservatism by conservative justices in history. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rottler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house. And if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rottler.com. Rottler.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rottler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rottler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rottler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rottler. Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com, Rottler.com.
Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around. Give me one reason to stay here, and I'll turn right back around. Said I don't want to leave you lonely. You gotta make me change my mind.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 specifies you cannot discriminate based on sex. It's always been taken to be male or female. You can't hire just male and not hiring females if the equal opportunity is not there. A decision out of the Supreme Court yesterday in a 6-3 decision authored by one of the newer justices appointed by President Trump, Neil Gorsuch, decided that Title VII also applies to sex-reference LGBTQ employees. And there's where the battle begins for some all over again. Joining us now, Hans von Spakowski of the Heritage Foundation. Hans, you'll have to forgive me. I'm fighting an allergy here, and I can't say anything right, much less your name. Welcome, sir. Please forgive me.
Larry, thanks for having me back.
So first of all, go ahead, your response on that.
Well, I was going to say, look, you've encapsulated the case very, very well. And the dissenters in the case, which were Justice Alito, Justice Thomas, and Kavanaugh, they actually set this out correctly. The issue wasn't the policy question. You know, should it be illegal to discriminate against somebody because of their sexual orientation? The question is, who gets to decide that? And it's not the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's what the majority did wrong. Look, the 64 Civil Rights Act is very clear. You know, you can't discriminate in the employment situation. You can't refuse to hire. You can't fire somebody because of their race, their color, their religion, their national origin, or their sex. And it's very, very clear when you go back to 1964 and you look at the debate and discussions in Congress that what they meant was that, look, at that time, women were being discriminated against blatantly all over the country in employment, and this was intended to stop that. So when they put the word sex in, they were talking about the biological sexes, male and female. And yet, Neil Gorsuch, and just I'm just shocked, said, oh, well, no, sex includes sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, gender identity, you know, transgenderism, that wasn't even a concept in 1964. And there is no way that a single member of Congress, I don't care if they were a Democrat or Republican, who voted for this in 1964 could have possibly imagined that it would apply to one of the three cases, you know, that were consolidated.
Right.
One of the cases before the court was a guy who was hired by a funeral home, and after he was hired, he told the funeral home, well, I will be showing up at work dressed as a woman because I'm going to be living as a woman. There's no way that Congress intended that in 1964.
I fully agree with you on all that, but I'm going to give you my take, and you can say, Larry, you're an absolute idiot. My concern is always we're never going to have things in this country right until all people are guaranteed all rights. But in this case, and I make a distinction between what we have here on the court and folks being hired or already in employ, and then over the weekend they get married and come in, say, I married my, two men married, and then they say, well, you're fired because we're not going to allow you here, versus groups going to a gay group going to a baker and saying, I want you to bake us a cake and forcing that business to comply with them. I see a difference. And I was surprised by Gorsuch's ruling too, but you clearly believe that it was a bad decision all the way around, not just based on the wording of sex, but just, and I do think it moves into legislation. So it's a big ball of wax here.
Yeah, but see, the what people have to do is distinguish between the policy, the idea that you just expressed, and the way we do things in our democratic system. Look, if you read the dissent, like I said, of Alito and Kavanaugh, they go to a great deal of trouble to actually praise the gay community. Just talk about how hard they've worked, you know, to achieve equal rights and all that. But what they say is, and they're right, is that it's not up to the Supreme Court to amend or rewrite the law. That is the role of Congress.
And that's not what I want the Supreme Court to do either. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Because, look, if the Supreme Court can do that, there's nothing we can do about it if we disagree with what they're doing. When members of Congress pass a law, you know, if the public doesn't like what they're doing, we can vote them out of office. You can't do that with members of the Supreme Court who are there for life. And we have separation of powers in this country for very good reason. That's part of our constitutional structure. It's Congress that makes the law, not the Supreme Court.
I'm glad
and
you...
what happened...
Go ahead.
And that's what happened here.
I'm glad you pointed out the dissent position of Alito and so forth, because that obviously is showing the balance of understanding, but also saying dealing with the law. Now Gorsuch again, I'm looking at a piece by Jessica Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School, says he's no one's liberal or even moderate jurist, same true for Roberts, and many white right-wing politicians and voters might be disappointed. But she says there's a difference between conservative judicial philosophy and conservative political philosophy. What does that mean?
Well, she's saying that he did what he said he would do, which is he's a textualist, that he talks about that a lot. In other words,
right,
he believes the Constitution and statutes should be applied and interpreted the way they are plainly written. But he makes a very basic error in this case, because what he said was, what to him textualism means is that you apply the word of the Constitution or the words of a statute according to their common public understanding at the time the law was passed. So in other words, what was the understanding of the word sex in 1964? Well, him saying that that understanding, the common understanding of sex at that time, included sexual orientation or homosexuality and transgenderism or gender identity, that is just totally wrong.
But his summation is that sex, as you talk about those, homosexual, transgender, his wording, sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids, his wording.
Yeah, I know, and he's just wrong about that. He's wrongly applying the kind of textual analysis that Justice Scalia, for example, said ought to be done. And I'm amazed that he made such a fundamental factual and historical error in his trying to apply this particular statute. What even more so shows that he's just wrong about this is that, and this is something Justice Alito pointed out. Listen, for decades now, there have been various bills introduced in Congress, including in this Congress, to amend the 64 Civil Rights Act to specifically add, remember, right now it says can't discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin, and the bills that have been introduced have been specifically to amend that language and add sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, if the law already included that, there wouldn't be any need for Congress to be passing bills to amend the statute. Those bills have been unsuccessful, but the point is, obviously, members of Congress didn't believe that the law included that.
Well, one final point in our closing minute here. I expressed my view in the sense that I wrestled with it, but I finally came down on, you know, what's going to be right for people in general. But I also hear we don't want to start short-circuiting our system. I agree with that. But I looked even at a comment by the editorial director for Breitbart deciding. He said that the Gorsuch decision in this case shows religious freedom and LGBT rights coexist. Is that an improper view?
I don't know about that. No, because I think what's going to happen is, for example, is that the probably the first target of lawsuits are going to be Catholic parochial schools. You know, somebody who is biologically a man but is living and dressing as a woman, to use the language in this case, is going to apply to be a teacher at a Catholic school. The Catholic parochial school is going to say that's not in accord with our teachings and our religious beliefs, and they're going to sue. And according to this case, potentially, the Catholic school could be forced to employ that particular individual.
And I would be against that. Hans, I know you're up against the clock. I want to thank you for your time, and always glad to have you on board. You really cut to the chase on some of it, and you kind of gave me more to think about than what I was perusing yesterday.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you, as always. Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. Yeah, as I said yesterday, I do think in this country we're never going to have everything for every... I mean, you've got to have equal rights for everyone, period. Equality. I might not prefer or appreciate someone's sexual or gender difference, preference, whatever it would be, but as long as it's not infringing on my right, then they should have their right. Although, what he pointed out, that this is going to have an additional backlash, and that is probably the bigger issue when you get down to it. And I am in favor of the Catholic schools being able to say, no, we're not hiring you. You don't represent our values. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, the issue of felons in voting, a new move underway. Where do you stand on that issue? We've got it for you coming up after this break.
To the place that's the best. When I
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Should felons be allowed to vote? This is after they're released from jail, either on parole, probation, or they've served their time. There's estimated something like 6+ million citizens with felony convictions currently barred from voting. Several states have been making changes when it comes to their state laws. Many states now are deciding to allow ex-felons who have completed their sentences to vote. They did it in Florida recently, of course, allowing ex-felons to have their voting rights restored after they complete their sentence, which reverses a previous law that imposed a lifetime ban on ex-felons from voting. The Iowa Governor, Kim Reynolds, a Republican, is now moving forward with an executive order to formally restore voting rights to paroled individuals, even if they had felony convictions. She believes that they should have those rights restored if they have served their time. This is different than allowing them to vote while they're still locked up. I'm strongly opposed to that voting possibility. You're locked up. You're not allowed to have a gun in there, obviously. You're not going to be allowed to vote. And, of course, even after you are served your time as a felon, you still can't have a gun legally. But the voting right, there's an effort underway, and its growing strength is to give the rights back to them. They consider it simply fundamental to our nation's democracy, guaranteed to every citizen. However, when you commit some crimes, you lose your freedom. We all know that. We lose your freedom in person by maybe being incarcerated, and you also lose some freedoms you would have. I gave you the number of 6+ million with felony convictions now barred. Another stat coming in, and I think this is probably low to be quite honest, but more than 2 million of that number would be African Americans. Now, I would think that number probably is lower, that it's probably a higher number, but maybe they're talking about if they've already been granted parole or they're out or they served their time. Of course, the bottom line for the leftists is they are convinced ex-felons will be inclined to vote Democrat, which means to me, and the way they say it, they are looking at, make no mistake about it, black felons that have served their time, because they are sure that they will now vote Democrat if they get the right back. In other words, they're playing the race card with their own black minority population. Because if they can get votes, that's what they want to do. Now, if you've got the Iowa Republican governor saying, I want to restore voting rights to paroled felons, maybe most of those in her state would be black, maybe most would be white. Now, how do we know for sure which way they're going to vote? We don't. Would they vote anyway? And in fact, you go back to that very crucial question to begin with. How many of them bothered to vote before they were ever convicted of any crime? Now, maybe they were convicted of a crime and they were real young and they were not of voting age at the time. Maybe they were only a year or two into where they could have exercised their voting rights and they didn't. There are a lot of, quote, great Americans, good Americans that say, well, I don't vote. I don't trust it anymore. I don't. I'm not dissing you and I'm not saying you're wrong, but I got to believe that if you're not going to be voting in major prime elections and issues of importance, you don't have much of a right to be complaining and making any noise about it. And if you were never voting before you became a felon, I really doubt that once you have the right, you're going to bother voting anyway. I'm sorry, it's just going to come down to that. I think a lot of them won't bother anyway. But if you're going to have the attitude, they've served their time, they've paid their debts to society, or they have been released on probation, parole, as long as they adhere to the other laws, that they should be able to have the right to vote again, both in state and federal elections. And again, the left says, oh yeah, I'm all for it, because they're convinced that they will be voting Democrat. And they're actually looking, the Democrats are looking at the racial makeup of the felons being released, or that have been convicted of a felony. it's a shame that they, again, look at it from that basis, but they're convinced that it'll be their vote. I have no problem with someone, once they have served their time in society and so forth, giving them that right to vote again. I don't. If you're inside still locked up, no, I'm not going to be allowing that vote to happen. And I'll say again, do we even know if they ever voted before, and will they even bother voting now? You, if you've never been locked up for a felon or anything, you still have that right, always have it. Do you always exercise it, or times that you haven't? You don't have to answer me. You know the question. Coming up in the next hour, a look at the Seattle chaos and how it continues, and of course more on police reform and the union issue. That'll be in the next hour. And also the company that holds the brand to Aunt Jemima syrup and pancakes is taking Aunt Jemima off the boxes and labels because they have been convinced it is racist. I don't know if you know the back story on the Aunt Jemima brand. I want to share that with you. We'll get into that and a lot more. It's all coming up in the next hour. So we're just halfway through. More to come. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.